in all of this. It really is something that you can be doing. And I'll ask you to begin by opening up your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 5. There's a section in 1 Peter chapter 5 in which Peter begins by giving some advice to those that are elders. And once he's finished with that advice, he turns his attention to the rest of the assembly. And in verse 5, it'll depend on your translation as to whether it's speaking specifically about elders or just about those that are older. But what I want you to notice is the attitude that everybody is to have. He says here, "Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, as God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble." There's an attitude and a spirit that everybody needs to have of humility toward each other, so that when you come together as a congregation, there is this spirit of others are more important than I am, and that I am concerned about the spiritual well-being of those around me. Back in chapter 3, and in verse 8, here in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 has a similar thought. It's almost a kind of a concluding sort of thought to some things that Peter's been saying. He says, "Finally, all of you have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind." So the very first thing I would say is that everybody needs to develop this spirit of humility and submission. Imagine a man who has worked or worship in a congregation where everybody has that kind of a spirit, where he's comfortable knowing that others are not trying to put themselves first. There isn't this grabbing for self-interest. And so he's also kind of developed that same attitude of submission and humility because he's used to seeing it in the conduct of others. Think about how much easier it would be for a man like that if you were to ask him to serve as an elder. How much more ready he would be to take on that responsibility if he knew that that was the spirit that everybody had. The other advantage I think that exists in having that kind of a spirit is that on occasions you're going to have a process where you select elders. And those elder selection process sometimes are periods of great anxiety. We worry about who might be selected and are they really ready? And we worry about the change that that might present to a congregation. But when everybody has this spirit of humility, the spirit of being ready to submit to one another, that type of anxiety would likely go away. And so you might even picture it where a congregation is constantly in the mode of selecting elders in that men are working to prepare themselves to be the sort of men they ought to be to do that. The congregation is acting in a cooperative, a submissive manner toward the elders that are there. That sort of spirit is one that would make it very easy as time goes on for other men to step in to take on that role as they are needed to do that. Second thing that I think you can do is to look for men who have the character of that Luke 15 shepherd. And when we talk about the qualifications of elders, we'll go to 1 Timothy chapter 3, we'll go to Titus 1. Those give us a description of what the character of that man needs to be. But on Friday night, we talked about three of the names that are used for elders. You can call them bishops or pastors. You can call them shepherds. You could call them presbyters. There's some different names. It's the same office. If you think about them as shepherds, it's valuable to look at the scriptures that tell us something about shepherds. In Luke chapter 15, you know that chapter. It's the one about those that are lost. Jesus talks about the fact that a good shepherd, in fact, he says, "Which one of you, to those that were assembled there, they all would act in this manner if they were a shepherd." He says, beginning with verse 3 in this regard, "What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulder, rejoicing. When he comes back, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I found my sheep that was lost.'" That's the behavior of a shepherd. Even if one sheep is wandered away, he's concerned about it. He's going to go after it. submit to you that there are men in this congregation who have that kind of spirit who are not now serving as elders. And if you looked around, you would find men who have that kind of heart and that sort of spirit. In fact, I think the way that you can find them is to go through this exercise in your mind. Imagine that you are struggling with something spiritually, and it's reached the point in your life where your attendance, you're no longer faithful in your attendance here. Maybe you're discouraged over something. You're involved in some sin. There has been a change in your life spiritually, and you have drifted away from God. You can imagine yourself in that situation. I want you to ask two questions. The first question is, who would you just know immediately? If you could picture yourself in that situation, who would be at your door, knocking on your door to talk to you, calling you on the phone, texting you, trying to get hold of you to talk to you about your spiritual condition? Because the person you know would do that is somebody who's got some of this spirit of this Luke 15 shepherd. The second question is kind of related to it, but you may not have exactly the same person in mind. Who would you want to be there? Who is that person that you know of who's very effective in reaching you, who you feel has an influence over your life, that if you were in that kind of a situation, that's the person you would want to be there to talk to you, because you have always been influenced by them in a good way. And the way that they speak to you is an effective way. And the spirit and the manner in which they carry themselves is something that if you were drifting away from God, that person you know would be able to help you to think about it and to come back to the Lord. Anyone you answer in those two questions is somebody that you can think of and recognize as someone who can make a good elder. They've got the spirit of that shepherd that they need to have. And once you've kind of thought through and identified some of those kinds of men, you really ought to begin to increase your knowledge of them. Try to know them better. Don't just focus on, I think this happens oftentimes, one reason for asking you to go through that sort of an exercise. But I think that you will think about in men that are not necessarily those that are out in a public manner, maybe teaching a large class like this, or leading the singing, or doing something in a more public manner. Hopefully what it will help you to do is to identify some of those who have maybe a less well-known role, but their character and their heart is that of a man who would make a good shepherd. So you want to find them, and then you want to begin to know those men better. You might ask yourself, how do you get to know people better? I think most of us understand this. If you find a man like this, have his family into your house. Begin to use your hospitality to know them better. But there's some other things I think that are worthwhile to do as well. When you're in a group setting, spend more time with that individual. See if you can't, in that kind of group setting, be closer to them. Or if it's a group meeting or something where you are doing some work on behalf of the Lord, watch how they conduct themselves in that work. When you're in a Bible class with a man like this, begin to listen more carefully to the comments and to the answers that he gives in those classes. Not because you want to be critical of them, but think about the value of your listening, because one of those qualifications for elders has to do with their degree of knowledge and wisdom in the Scriptures and ability to even be able to deal with false teachers. You can learn a great deal about an individual based on their comments in a class. You can see maybe they have a weakness, a lack of understanding in a certain area. And that might be something that you could help them with down the road. As you recognize, they've got the heart of a shepherd, but they're not yet quite there in terms of their Bible knowledge. And I've identified that, and I'd like to help them in some way. Or speak to the elders about this man that you believe might become a very good shepherd down the road, but you think he needs some instruction or teaching in a particular area. You learn some things by paying attention to those. Listen to the comments that others make about them. And again, this isn't about gossip. You want to be careful about that. But if you have seen this person, you begin to think of them as having that kind of potential, then listen to what others say about them, because you may find that they do have a strength you didn't expect to know about, or even a weakness that, again, you might be able to highlight to others to help this individual grow over time. Another thing I think that you can do as well as a congregation for this man is to help them to be good husbands and fathers. Look with me at 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3 verses 4 and 5 is right in that section of the qualifications of an elder. And in there is a description given about their families and what their role in terms of raising their families says about their ability to be someone who cares for the church. Verse 4, he must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? In parallel passage in Titus 1, where Paul is telling Titus the qualifications for an elder, he says that it needs to be, if anyone is above reproach, the husband of one wife and his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. What that is saying is that a man's conduct inside of his family is a training ground. That's something that ought to mold him and change him and turn him into the kind of man who can serve as an elder. And unfortunately, there have been a number of men over the years who might otherwise have become very skillful, helpful, edifying elders, but because of failures inside of their family, those opportunities never came later for them to serve in that capacity. I think there's a role that you can play in terms of helping good men and women raise their children in such a way that when it is all finished, we can look back and say they've managed their household well, that their children are submissive to the Lord and they're not insubordinate. And if our thought is that in this training ground for the man, we need to kind of leave them alone over here, and that's how we know whether they really can do well. We've missed the point. We want to help to train them. The whole congregation could help to train them as you're involved with their children. We might just kind of put all of that discussion about elders to the side for a moment and think about the fact, isn't that really what we all should be doing anyway? In our efforts to help and to serve one another, don't you have some responsibility? Even if they're not your children, those children, all these children, we're all here together, look around you, see all of these children that are here. If you have an opportunity to be an influence in their lives, shouldn't you be that positive influence, knowing them, being close enough to them to have some influence in directing them toward the Lord over the course of their life? You can also think about this, though, as your opportunity to help those families. Now, I can remember with our children, as we were raising them, feeling kind of two thoughts. One was that I'd really need a lot of advice here. I'd love to have some advice. And then we'd look at some, Kay and I would look at some of the older couples who were farther along in raising their children and look for the ways that they were doing things that we thought were working. We wanted that advice. And at the same time, kind of had that spirit of not wanting anybody to criticize us. You know, we were sensitive. I think most parents are sensitive about that. How do you help somebody rear their children without insulting them in some way in the way that what they're doing? I think you know that the way to do that is you've got to be close to them. You need to have built up a trust with them so that your advice is something that's well received. So as a congregation, you should look for, when you see those kind of men who have this potential, you should do it with anyone where you can have that close relationship. Be willing to speak to them about how you raised your children, about the struggles you had in certain ways, the things that worked, the lessons that you learned. That's a very valuable thing to them. And then you need to tell them, I think, what you see about them in their future. I mentioned on Friday that I have served as an elder. In November, I believe it will be 8 years that I've been an elder. 2 years before I was appointed as an elder, we were going through a selection process at Embry Hill. And at that point in time, of my three children, one of them had been converted. So there was one believing child in our home. And so during that process, I really, both based on my age, based on where my children were, I did not consider that process to have much to do with me personally, as far as someone who might be selected as an elder. But one evening in the parking lot, one of the ladies there, one of the members came up to me, and you'd have to know Aaron to understand. Aaron gets emotional about a lot of things, but Aaron came up with tears in her eyes and told me that I was the only person there, only man at that time, that she could see serving as an elder. And she was going to put my name into that form that we were using at that time. In many ways, I was shocked that she thought that. But her emotions were what really struck me more than anything else. The confidence that she had, and we were pretty close to Aaron and her husband, so she had reason to know my weaknesses and others. The fact that she had that confidence gave me a seriousness of mind about the whole process and about the future that I didn't have before. It changed the way that I approached those next few years until I actually was selected as an elder. I think you need to be willing to tell men that you see, even those that are a lot younger, and it may be 10 or 15 years before, but if you see that potential in them, it's important for them to know that. We began with this first idea of everyone having a spirit of humility. Sometimes men have a degree of humility to the point that they don't see their potential. They don't understand what they may be able to do in the Lord's kingdom. You can play a great role in strengthening their vision of what they're able to do and urge them to push a little bit harder to do those things that might allow them to become an elder. So I'm going to turn our attention, though, for the remaining part of this to some advice to the men. Some of this, for those of you that were able to be here over the weekend, will be a little bit of a repeat, but not all of it. These are some things I think it's good for everyone to hear as you think about what a man may need to be doing, what he need to be considering in order to grow in his abilities and grow in his opportunities to serve the Lord, whether he becomes an elder or not. Certainly, if that may be the path. The first thing I would say, which is kind of related back to that last point about you serving a place and putting this vision into his mind and allowing him to see that if he continues to follow the Lord and dig into his word and do the things that he ought to do, that he has that kind of potential. Men need to begin to desire the work. And that's not always an easy thing to do. Again, that degree of humility would kind of push you away from it. No, I'm certainly not one who should serve in that capacity. Sometimes we are careful to warn individuals about an incorrect amount of ambition. Someone who might desire the work because they want the attention of others or they want the title behind their name somehow. That can be a bad thing, and we trying to be sure that young men understand that and don't have that in mind, we may keep them from desiring the work as they ought to. But if you look at the passage in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1, which talks about it, and your translation will say this latter part, maybe in some different ways, but it says that they desire a noble task, or the New King James Version says, a good work. This is a worthy task to take on. It's an important thing. And so men need to learn how to desire this. And that's been one of our purposes in coming here this weekend, was has been to maybe stir up among a number of your men a recognition of what's at stake, of the importance of the work and of the souls that could be saved or could be strengthened or helped to grow in the way that they ought to, and the impact that then in turn those men and women can have on others. There's so much at stake. Why not desire the work? But in the proper way, with the spirit, the right spirit of humility. If a man does desire the work, if you are someone here who says, and you can understand how that maybe that's something that you could do down the road, there's two pieces of advice that I'd like to give you related to that. And these are a little different than some of the things that we talked about this weekend. The first thing that I would ask of those men is to endeavor or make your efforts to stay here. Or if you're visiting wherever you are currently worshiping and having some influence. One of the reasons we began to put some of the material that we've gone through this weekend together, so we looked back over the history of the congregation there at Embry Hills. And what we saw was that we had like this unlimited supply of deacons. We now have 28 men serving as deacons. But we've had a lot of change in those men as some have moved away and gone on to other places. We've always been able to find men ready to step in as deacons. I can't remember a single time we said, we need 3 men to serve as deacons. Here are the forms. Please give us your feedback on those. And we didn't get enough names that maybe we could have asked twice that many to have served as deacons. And yet, over the years, we have frequently asked, okay, does the congregation believe that a man is ready to serve as an elder? And the feedback would be, no one's quite there yet. And so we weren't developing and finding men who were elders. And it was disappointing in the numbers, and then we began to recognize those deacons that had once been there, that had moved on to other places and other men, they're serving as elders in other congregations around the country. Maybe we've done some of this, but those men have left. I would say that it's difficult. You could prepare yourself to be an elder in many ways, in your knowledge, in your spirit, and in your character. But if you move constantly from one place to another, you may never come to know a group well enough that they feel comfortable, that you have the right character, or you know them well enough to serve as a shepherd, and there's a loss that's there. So if it's possible for you to be able to stay, I would say make your efforts to try to do that. The second thing is that you should be very careful with the commitments that you make in life. This is one of the reasons why I think that it is important to have this vision that you might one day be an elder early on. But long ago, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I wish I didn't have to say that sentence. Long ago, when I was in my 20s, when I thought about the eldership, I heard men say things like, be sure you have that in mind. Maybe that's one of your goals. My thought was, And this may be on your mind as well, if you look carefully at those qualifications of an elder in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1, that's a character that every single Christian should be endeavoring to have. And that for the most part, that if you strive to serve God as you ought to do, and you are growing as you should be growing, then just by a natural process, you will find yourself ready to be an elder. And there is some truth and wisdom to that. But at the same time, what you're missing are some of those long-term goals where you look out to the future and you recognize that what you may want to be able to do in the future is going to be dependent on the decisions that you make today or the effectiveness of what you might accomplish in the future is dependent on the decisions that you make today. So when I say to you, be careful with the commitments that you make, there are financial commitments that you may make in terms of the things that you buy, the things that you do, or the way that you approach your life so that when the time comes that you might serve as an elder, you have to have a certain kind of job that prevents you from having enough time or enough concentration to be able to be as effective as an elder as you might want to be. And there may be other commitments too. The way that you approach life, the things, the decisions that you and your wife make, think about how those could have an impact. And if you're not sure about what some of those are, you ought to talk to your elders here and ask them about some of the things that they did earlier on and the decisions that maybe they regret. And I've had counsel with the men at Embry Hill. There are a number of decisions that I would take back that I made in my 20s and 30s that were not wrong. They seemed to be wise at the time, but I think they have had an impact in the effectiveness of my service as an elder, and I would like to have undo them in some fashion. So be very careful about the kind of commitments that you make. I would also say that you ought to begin to work now as a shepherd. You don't need the title. You don't need to be appointed to be an elder to act as a shepherd. think back again to that passage in Luke chapter 15. It's talking about the spirit of somebody who sees a lost sheep and will do whatever it takes to go and to get them and to bring them back. Look over at Galatians 6 in verse 1. We have referred to this passage a few times in our discussions with the men. I think we may even have mentioned it on Friday night if you were able to be here. Here's a commandment given not to elders, but to anyone who really is spiritually minded. It says, brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watching yourself, lest you too be tempted. And I might draw your attention also down to verse 10, where it says, so then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are the household of faith. We oftentimes get down to verse 10 and we think of that only in terms of doing good to somebody in a physical way, a benevolent sort of way. If you think about the connection of verse 10 back up to verse 1, you might even recognize the fact that wherever you have an opportunity to help someone know about God and to bring them closer to His Son, you who are spiritual, you need to be busy doing that. And so you need to begin to have that spirit of a shepherd. And as you have influence on others around you, be willing to reach out and to help them in whatever way that you can. Look at James chapter 5. James 5, at the very end of the letter that James wrote, it talks about the great value of this kind of work, of helping to restore a soul or turn somebody to God. He says, my brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone, again, think about this, he's not saying only elders can do this, but if someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. But a valuable, important work to be involved in. You can get involved in now. And you can imagine how that a man who has constantly lived that way, always watching those around him, when he sees somebody wandering away from Christ, he's there to talk to them. He's there to help them to become closer to God. If he's done that on a constant basis, you can imagine why, if the time comes for him to serve his God, he's ready. He's already doing that kind of work. And not only is he doing the work, but if you've had that kind of spirit, that ought to be the thing that speaks out to the rest of the congregation. That's the man we want to help us, to give account for our souls one day, because he's already doing it on my behalf. And I see him already in that kind of a role and are comfortable with him doing that. We have a deacon who very much acts in this manner. We actually have a number of men, I would say, who do this, but one particularly stands out. He's kind of learned to think of himself. He knows that he's not a shepherd, but he says that he's a sheepdog. He's helping us. He's getting all the sheep. He's constantly thinking about the souls of others. And you need to be like that long before you become an elder. I added this since the last time I delivered a discussion like this. It's kind of new to my notes, this idea of learning how to deliver difficult news. I thought back about some of the things that are hard as an elder to do. There are many occasions when you have to sit across the table from someone who has had something terrible happen to them in their life. Maybe they've been involved in some kind of sin and it's wrecked terrible consequences on them and on others. And they need to understand what it takes to get out of the circumstance that they're in. You need to be able to tell them the things that Christ tells us about the right way to live life. That news is not always easy to hear. It's not easy to tell a woman that she ought to forgive her husband of something that he's done. That she needs to have that kind of Christ-like spirit. For a man to hear that he needs to be able to look past what somebody has done to hurt him. Not easy. Christ tells us a number of things. Think about those commandments that are hard for us to follow. Elders need to be willing to sit down across from someone and tell them what God expects of them when that's not what they really want to hear. They may be looking for different kind of counseling or comfort. You got to tell them what they need to do, and you need to do it in a spirit and in a manner that they're willing to listen to you and understand why that's the right thing to do. And I think gaining experience in delivering difficult news will help you to do that. Elders are to have been fathers who have managed their household well. We've talked about that. There's an opportunity for men to learn how to discuss things that are hard to discuss. And maybe say things that those who are listening, their children, don't necessarily want to hear. And one advice I would give to you men, is to be careful as fathers that you don't delegate this responsibility to your wife. Not that they don't have a place, and there's plenty of time for them to sit down, maybe even a one-to-one with the children, but be careful that you haven't somehow or another left that kind of responsibility. And when one of the children does something really wrong, they're the ones who are sitting down and explaining to them the consequences or what this is going to mean in life. If one of the children is heading down, making some bad decisions, and they need to be pulled in the right direction, make sure that it's not just your wife who's sitting and you've got to develop that relationship, and you need to learn how to talk to those children. And the older that they get, the better the experience is for you. As they are into their teenage years, and you can remind them of the mistakes that you made, that is a training ground for you. And especially for men with daughters. Your daughters need to have that relationship with you, and that's a valuable experience for you. Don't let, especially as your daughters get older, that the relationship they have on these kinds of things is only that between the mother and the daughter. You need a role in that. And they will treasure you for it, and it will help to prepare you to be the kind of man you should be if you were to serve as an elder. And it may very well be that you have some opportunities like this in your jobs as well. Not every job does this. I've thought back over in retrospect about the value of certain things that I had to do in the roles that I had in the jobs that I held that I didn't like at the time. They were difficult things to do. And you have to tell somebody that the job or responsibility, the promotion they wanted to have, they're not qualified. They can't do that. They're not ready. They need to do something else. I've been in companies where we were no longer able to keep all the good workers. Some of them were let go because we didn't have the money anymore to be able to pay them. To sit down and tell somebody who's doing a good job that their job is going away, that is not a pleasant thing to do. I didn't like it, but I will say it helped me later on to understand that sometimes you've got to tell people hard news with kindness and love and respect for them, but you got to tell them what is the truth, what they need to hear. And that kind of training ground, if you have those opportunities, don't shy away from them. They actually may help you in being able to do other things in the kingdom of God. And lastly, I would say that you ought to study the hard questions. We talked about this a little bit before. You should make an effort to be a good Bible student. We can tell, you can wander around. It wasn't difficult for Marty or I to tell that good Bible classes are taught here. They're knowledgeable teachers. Great opportunities to know more about the Word of God. But be careful, we said this yesterday, be careful about studying only those things that are just sort of really interesting to you at the moment. There are some questions that it's hard to get to the truth. And I think that's part of the point of Hebrews chapter 5. There are some things you kind of have to wrestle through in your mind. Think about very carefully. Understand that there are two passages that give different not different views, opposing views, but different elements of the truth, and you have to put them together, and it takes a while to see how they work together with each other. There are hard situations in terms of making applications back to those scriptures. Exercise your mind in doing that. Spend your time in study on hard questions. You don't know the answer to something, that's good. That's where you should put your attention, on that question you're not quite sure of. And use the resources around you. You know, you've got Steve and the elders and other men that you have respect for. Listen to them. Learn from them. and find the answers to some of these hard questions. We shared with the group. I know that as I began to serve as an elder, I realized that there were so many questions I hadn't even thought of before. I'd had the time to study. I put time in the Bible study, but I had not put time into those kinds of questions. It would have been a very valuable thing to have done. I can see the clock says 9:40. I assume the bell is about to ring. I appreciate your attention. If you'd like to ask a few questions about some of these, or even better, if you can think of something in terms of the advice to the men or advice to the congregation that I should have mentioned, let me know. I'm always willing to edit my notes and change them, and it will help somebody else down the road. But I appreciate your time this morning.